Our next guest said we're the team to beat. He's an all-time Philly, 15 years with the organization. He's an MVP, an all-star, a gold glover, and he's back with the organization, a special advisor to the Phillies. His name is Jimmy Rollins, J-Roll, joining John and Ike Reese. What's up, Jimmy?
What's going on, fellas?
I just refer to you as the hit king. You know what I mean? You're the hit king, man. What's up, J-Roll?
I'm good. Just out here enjoying some nice warm weather compared to you guys up there down in Florida enjoying this beautiful sun today.
Well, listen, we got the news, was it yesterday or the day before yesterday. That you were going to rejoin the organization. First of all, tell us sort of how it came about and sort of what this new special advisory role is going to entail for yourself.
Well, last spring training, I met with Clint Tack and Dave Buck just to go over basically getting back involved with the organization. It was something maybe about four years before I actually came to an end. I talked to my agent about it, and we just talking about the different roles that players play after their career to go back to the organization and just try different things, whether you want to get into coaching, upper management, whatever, just being back at a place where you performed, you made a name for yourself, they love you, and they took care of you, just doing something with them. So last spring training, actually, sat down for breakfast, and they just basically said, let us know what you want to do. And I thought, I've never been on this side before, so I'm like, whatever you want to do. If you want to get involved in any capacity, let us know. We'll consider it and go from there. So they had a chance to think about it. I had a chance to think about it. We agreed to a certain number of days just to get a flavor, just to make sure it's something I want to do. And obviously, why wouldn't I? About last September, I think I met the team down in Miami, and it was a little weird just being back in the clubhouse on this side of it. Met the team down there and I talked to a couple guys and just hung out with them. And I was like, yeah, this is for sure something I want to do, just being around, and hopefully bring a little bit of that winning flavor back.
So working with some of the younger guys, you're going to be doing stuff within the minor leagues. Is it kind of all of the above? I mean, what do you feel like you're going to be doing here?
Well, first and foremost, I'm going to be playing a lot of golf, just hanging out with the sponsors.
There you go.
But obviously, in spring, working with guys when they stay back, just being an ear, being a guy that can give them some advice about adversities, advice about playing in the city, and then just what to expect. Also, hopefully get them in a right mind frame of what it's like to win. Winning, you don't just show up and win. Win starts with the belief first, and then you have to go out there and perform. And the more you perform, the better you get, the more you actually believe you can win. And you also have to understand that winning is not about the one person in a batter's box at that moment. It's about passing the baton. The next guy has to do his job. The next guy has to do his job. And although they're all individual actions at one time, without everybody else, you're not going to win, bottom line. So you can't be, a selfish player. Obviously, in that moment, be selfish. When you're in a box, you want that hit. When you're on a, you want to get that strikeout or make the pitch. When the ball comes your way on the defensive side, you want to make that play. Yes, in those moments, be selfish, but understand that leadership is more important than the talent. If you have talent with great leadership, then you're going to win. And just try to develop all those attitudes with the guys that are there.
With your team, Jimmy, you had a bunch of guys. You said it, passed the baton, but you had a bunch of guys. You and Chase, Ryan, obviously the big piece. You had Shane. Not only did you have the star players, but you had star players behind the star players: Jason Worth, Carlos Ruiz. I mean, you're really talking about the greatest era in Phillies baseball. When you guys were playing, did you realize it when you were in the middle of it, or were you just playing and trying to win?
We were just playing to try to win. I think everybody knows they're pretty good. But you're only as good as your last game, regardless of how good you are. A losing streak is right around the corner. So you can never get too far or too full of yourselves. And yes, we had a great core around us. Guys, they say, stars behind the stars. But we never had that mentality that we're stars. And, just playing in Philly, one, you go out there and think you're a star, they'll let you know real quick that, hey, you got to work. You have to earn the star every single day. So we came in knowing that every single day, it doesn't matter how much money you're making, what accolades you have, that you're no better than the next guy behind you. Because if you're good and he isn't, and you're not doing your job to help make him better, then you're actually a detriment to the team. So So we always look back and stay within ourselves in that group. No, yes, we knew we were good. Obviously, you never want to pay attention to how good you are because you're always looking forward to be the best. So our eyes were always forward in that regard. And looking back, yes, we're good. Talking to guys, talking to catchers, talking to other pitchers that played against us, they told us now the difficulties they have facing our lineup. That's when you realize you're good, is when the other people. You can't tell yourself you're good. It's when the other teams and other players tell you how good you guys were. That's when you really get to understand, I guess, how good you actually were in that moment.
I'm interested in your perspective on where you see this team at now, considering you, when you were here at a downtime. You saw it grow into the best times, and then you saw the end of that era and how it tailed off to where we are now as a Phillies organization. When you look at the team, J-Roll, and where they are going forward, you feel good about the team and some of the things they've done, the young talent they've acquired, some of the vets they've acquired, and then some of the things they're trying to get done this offseason to also help them advance.
I definitely do. They have the talent. I don't think there's a lack of talent there. Maybe some know-how. Obviously, you have a World Series champion in the clubhouse. You have guys that have been around. But you don't bring that all together in 1 year. It takes being together, around each other, through battles, through the highs, through the lows, seeing who people really are, then understanding each other's strengths and weaknesses. Once you start doing that, then you can really figure out who you are and where you are. Talent is there. They definitely have the talent. It's just a matter of them, one, learning how to play, two, then getting pissed off enough to be like, I don't want to go home anymore. I'm tired of coming to second place. I'm tired of coming in third place. Once you develop those characteristics as a team, then you can become that much better. But it usually starts with one person. That's that leader. That's a leader. Someone who goes out for me. It was my vocal saying that we're the team to beat. But just somebody to go out and say the obvious. We want to win. We're going to win. And then going out and improving it. And once those things start to happen, not just, you know, breaking your bats on strikeouts or, you know, all those little things, is actually being accountable every single step of the way through ups and downs, your mistakes, through the glories. That's when you start seeing the core come together and the character of the team come together, and then the guys coming together and really becoming who they should be.
We're talking to Jimmy Rollins, who is back with the Phillies, officially a special advisor to the Phillies, and he'll be working with players both during the season and then in spring training. Jimmy, it's well documented that the Phillies have a lot of money to spend, and there's a couple big names on the free agent market. What advice would you give player X, player Y, Bryce Harper, Machado, whoever it may be? You were here for 15 years. You had a unique relationship with the media and the fans here. 15 years is a long time. What advice would you give to a superstar player coming into this city from your perspective?
As a superstar player coming to the city, Jim Thome would be the model. You know, he came in from Cleveland with all the glory that he had, going to a new place, leaving a place that was comfortable winning divisions, although they didn't win a World Series. He was a big part of all of that, the big man in the middle. And he came to Philly, and he put on his worker's hat, and he went right to work. He didn't let his star get in the way of what was most important, and that was trying to win a championship there in Philadelphia. So anybody that comes there, understanding that you're not bigger than a city. You're not going to be bigger than the fans. That, you know, when you go there, you're almost kind of like renting the uniform. You're representing that city, but you don't own that uniform. That belongs to the people of Philadelphia, and they will let you know if, you know, you're one of them or not. But you have to work for that. You can't come in there feeling entitled, like I'm my star, and, you know, bow down to me. This is who I am. It's like you may be all that. I'm not saying that you're not. But when you come to that city, you have to understand, you have to earn it all over again. Great, we're glad you're here, and we know your past, but we want to see you do it in this uniform and make sure that you earn those stripes.
Yeah, it's good advice. Jimmy, Gabe Kapler, a lot of people, we were talking about Gabe a lot last year here on WIP. What are your impressions of him? And listen, you with Charlie Manuel, quite different than Gabe. Gabe's a workout fanatic. He's tanned, right? He's toned, he's good looking. Charlie wasn't in as good a shape, right?
Oh, come on, man.
I mean, I don't know. You ever seen Charlie with a shirt off? He has some packs rolling.
what do you think of Gabe? He's kind of the new age manager.
Yeah, he really is. And obviously, during his playing days, if you know anything about him, he had been studying, you know, in that way, the analytics of baseball and maybe just in everything in life, the way each, all everything around, he's going to try to put the best team forward. Me personally, I think analytics are a tool, and that's what they should be left as, a tool. One thing I loved about Charlie is he understood that, you know, what numbers would say, but if he had a gut feeling, he went with it. And what he did by doing that was build confidence in the guys that it doesn't matter what the situation says. It matters that Charlie's been paying attention to where you to the way you've been playing, where you've been swinging, or whatever, and he thinks you're the right guy in this moment. And if you're hot, he's going to keep playing you. And in today's game, it's more about, you know, the numbers than it is the guy. And there's no guarantee just because you have bad numbers against a guy that today isn't your day to change that. But according to the analytics, they're going to take all that to consideration. And more than likely, you can lose a star player that day or a couple of days just because of the numbers. And then what you're saying to your star player is that it doesn't matter how good you are, you're not better than the numbers. And you need that to go out there, that guy to go out there every single day knowing that he's going to bat a certain place in the lineup. He doesn't have to look at that lineup and that he's playing. And that's what I liked about Charlie. Charlie would always say, if they want to fire me, then let them fire me. If they want a different manager to write the lineup, then God damn it, let them do it, J-Roe.
Jimmy, it's, you know, it's funny because I was saying this to Ike earlier. When you think about all the memories that you guys had, right, and we asked people on Twitter your favorite Jimmy Rollins memory. Mine is, obviously, there's the 2009 and there's the 2020, all the great memories, but I just remember a regular game in the middle of the summer where the camera pans into the dugout and you and Charlie are just sitting there busting each other's stones, right? Like, I don't know if you knew that was a couple times a game. You're laughing at something. Charlie's giving it to you a little bit. What were those talks like? What was your relationship with Charlie?
It was great, and that's one thing. I mean, I'm sure Gabe would understand that, and I hope he does. Charlie, we sit there, we talk baseball strategy. I'd be all in space. Charlie, why don't we try something? No, J. Roy, I don't. Or sometimes, like, I like that, but goddamn, who are we gonna have go up there and do it, son? And it's like, well, Charlie, I mean, we got to try it. And, you know, he would let me reason. He would give me his reason back. Obviously, he's a manager. He's always going to win. But he let me express, you know, things that I felt that could help us win that day or improve or, you know, like we've been struggling a little bit. Why don't we just try something? So we would sit there and just go back and forth, talk about strategy. Sometimes we'd talk about the ball that, you know, Cole Hamels gave up a home run to the Mets. We both look at each other like, hoo-wee. Probably like, that's how I used to hit him, son. Make that bell ring, J-Roe. it was just, you know, it was a game within a game. The game is stressful enough. You got to have a manager that the players know has their backs and have that freedom to freely flow back and forth. Sometimes you might say something, might not make any sense, but you need to get it off your chest. And Charlie always had that policy. If you want to say something and know where you stand with me, come into my office. I'll tell you where you stand. You might not like it, but at least you will know. So he was very open and honest about that, and you always knew where you stood, and that's very important to every player.
J-Roe, I want to get your thoughts on just baseball, the state of baseball, right? And whether or not you like where it's at, where it's headed. There is a sense out there that the game isn't as exciting to the youth as it used to be, and it's one of the dying sports. I'm just wondering, as a former great player in this game, how do you feel about where it's at right now and where you think it will be 10 years from now?
Yeah, it's a lot different. I mean, I think I came in 2000, which was it was starting to go from the old school. When I say old school, meaning like the era of the 80s and 90s. So this hardcore, you know, putting greenies in every coffee mug around there to the steroid era, to the kind of new age in baseball and obviously designer drugs. So I was through all that transitional stuff, and baseball is exciting. You still played baseball. It wasn't about this new launch angle and all these shifts. It was more in a purist stance, but you still had to find ways to win games. Managers had to manage. Managers were allowed to manage. It wasn't lineups coming down from the upper management telling you who to play today. Today's game, I think, and everybody knows that, that the manager generally today has become a guy that the upper management can't control. They almost get to tell him what to do, and either kind of bends their will, or you know they'll find somebody that will. I don't know where the game is going. Honestly, I think it's in another transitional period. The game is always going to change. I mean, every sport goes through its changes, and you know, finding you know the new stars of this new style of baseball. Those are the guys that will have to make it exciting. Obviously, the contracts, the way they've been going, there's a lot of money out there. So you're not staying with the guy from basically his inception to the end of his career. So I'm not sure. Do I like the way it's going? Not really. I don't know, you know, how things can be changed. Those are things that they figure out in the bargaining agreements to try to benefit the players, you know, as much as they can. Of course, the union, obviously, the owners want to do their part. But I would love to see definitely some of the shifts, you know, out of the game, because that brings some excitement back in the game, just by letting baseball be baseball and, you know, not all these timers and, you know, extra scientific type of feel to it, you know, just the feel of the sport and the rhythm of the sport.
Jimmy, we asked the people on Twitter some of their favorite memories of you. Just off the top of your head, what are the few that stand out to you, the first couple to come to mind?
Obviously, winning the World Series, that's number one. Nothing will ever top that. That was just climbing that mountain and getting that monkey off your back. Number two was probably my 20th triple in 2007, but even before then, just coming out to the field and looking up at the scoreboard and seeing the Marlins up on the Mets like 4-0 in the first inning, and just getting that excitement like all we have to do is just go out there and get 2 or 3 runs today, we're going to win. You know, worst case scenario, we have a push and we have a playoff game. And I don't even think that was possible, but that was our mentality. So feeling that crowd, that energy, I mean, it was exciting. Coming out the dugout, they're screaming. You're not quite sure why they're screaming. You're kind of scared to look over, but you know it's good news, but you don't want to get caught up in that game, because if they lose and we lose, it doesn't matter. We have to go out there and win.
Right.
And then just the way it all came out, that had been since, 1993 that we went to the playoffs.
Yep.
So we made the playoffs, and now is another monkey. So those two in that order, literally, the World Series number one, coming out that last day in 2007, already with a 4-0 lead, the Marlins over the Mets. And then, you know, just that my personal accomplishment of getting that 20th triple, because that was a hard one to get. And then maybe the walk-off hit in 2009. And to be honest, that's number three, because that was, I mean, it was a personal accomplishment for me, but we didn't win the World Series.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Help get you there.
It's nice, but, you know, it's only as good as winning that next series, and we didn't. So, I mean, it was a nice moment, but, you know, we didn't win the World Series.
All right, we got one for you. You want to hear a little HK given the final out of 2007, the double play up the middle?
I'm listening.
Here it is.
Ground ball up the middle. J-Roll dives to Utley Rodriguez.
Yeah! Double play. Yeah! Yeah!
The Phillies are the National League Eastern Division champions on a spectacular double play. Turn J-Roll to Utley to Howard. What a play by J-Roll.
And that's 2008, obviously, J-Roll. What a play by J-Roll. How great is it listening to Harry?
Always great. He caught my first triple, and going back listening to that, he was just as smooth, you know, as my first hit as he was till he left us on this earth. Harry was a great man. I loved him. He sat in the back of the plane with us, you know, just kicked on back in the back of the plane. That's how much respect you have for Harry. The man walked to the back of the plane, and no one said a thing about it. And, you know, it had been great to have him around. You know, a little bit longer, obviously, but he isn't. But what a legacy left behind.
Yeah, you're not kidding. That play, I mean, I remember that play. If you guys lose that game, Cole's got to come out, I believe, and start the next day, which really you were able to line up your entire playoffs with it. Take us through that play right there. That might have been the biggest play of the year right there.
Definitely. Obviously, Brad Lidge having a perfect season. I mean, number-wise, I mean, when you're on the field, it's like, oh, Jesus. Every time you stepped up, it was a 3-2 count on the hitter. Bases loaded, runners on first and second. You're just praying to the guys, like, please get us out of this. But he was 48-48, and here we are against the Nationals. Zimmerman up, who likes to drive the ball to right center. You got Brad Lidge, who's a slider ball pitcher. So the break of the ball really falls into the path of his swing. So playing against him over and over and over, I just said to myself, you know what? I'm going to have to bet that he's going to try to hit the ball up the middle the other way. He's always done that. And it'd be dumb for me to literally play him in a straight-up position. So maybe about two pitches before that, I was like, you know what? If he hits the ball to left field, maybe that's one run for sure, maybe two. But if he hits it to center field, that's for sure two runs. So I'm trying to, you know, create less damage on a hit. And sure enough, the ball was up the middle, you know, just participating what's going to happen. And I probably didn't have to slide like that, but I was like, I can knock it down, and worst-case scenario, get one, but it went into my glove. I flipped it to Chase. He completed the double play, and we were popping bottles again.
Yes, sir. You were.
Sir.
The great Jimmy Rollins. Jimmy, you talk to your teammates. I know we see Big Peace doing pretty – he's doing very well on TV. He's a natural with it. You talk to all your guys from the team?
I talked to Ryan and Shane probably the most. I talked to Shane yesterday. I had dinner with Ryan 2 days ago. So, yeah, I keep up with those two guys the most. And then the rest of the guys I see along the way. Actually, Pat Burrow texts me every once in a while. And obviously Chase every once in a while. Like you might send Chase a text in January, and he might respond by June, but you can't take it personal.
That's funny. And Jimmy, you get your hands full at home. You have your beautiful wife. And how many kids now?
Three little girls.
Oh, my.
Yep. Three little girls, and they are rascals.
Well, Jimmy, congratulations, man, on everything. It's great to have you back formally in the organization. And listen, if you make it up to Philly, I'm sure you're going to be up to Philly sometime during the season. Ike and I broadcast from the booth inside Citizens Bank Park. So stop by and see us. We'd love to talk to you again.
For sure. Thanks guys, for having me. Thank you always for the support.
All right, Jay.
All right, Jimmy. Thanks, man.
All right, guys. All right, thank you.